From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Broadcasting from the heart of our nation's capital, we bring you the latest insights, analysis, and interviews on the most pressing issues that are facing you and your family. So for the next hour, we're going to navigate the conflict and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
Let's get one thing straight. The violence and this humanitarian crisis rest entirely on the shoulders of Hamas. This entire conflict would end if the cowardly terrorists who rule Gaza from beneath schools and hospitals released their innocent hostages.
That was the current Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell earlier today. Well, some of President Biden's top donors urged the president to distance himself from Israel. Republicans on Capitol Hill are providing support for our strategic ally. House Speaker Mike Johnson has been discussing an invitation to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address a joint session of Congress, as he did back in 2015 when Barack Obama was president. Well, today, Senate Republicans had a virtual conversation with the Israeli leader. Oklahoma Senator James Lankford joins us with details of that meeting in just a moment.
The American people deserve to hear the truth, though the truth involving the deep corruption of the Biden family, including the malfeasance of the sitting president of the United States, might be raw and unpleasant. The American people must hear it.
That was Biden family business partner Tony Bobulinski earlier at today's oversight and accountability hearing on influence peddling, examining Joe Biden's abuse of public office. We'll talk about that later. And a rash of airline safety incidents has many pointing to the FAA's and the airline industry's focus on DEI rather than SAFETY, safety. About three dozen members of Congress are trying to get ahead of the DEI curve as it pertains to health care by introducing legislation to stop the spread of diversity, equity, and inclusion virus in America's medical schools. The author of that bill, Dr. Greg Murphy of North Carolina, will join me later. And the situation in Haiti continues to deteriorate.
As of March 20th, the U.S. government is facilitating the safe departure of U.S. citizens from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. We are in the process of organizing government chartered helicopter flights from Port-au-Prince to Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic.
That was State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel. We'll explore the history of this situation in Haiti and why we should be concerned about this country, which is just about 700 miles from our shores, with Professor A.J. Nolte later on today's edition of Washington Watch. As always, as we dive into today's issues, remember the bedrock principles that guide us here at Washington Watch: faith, family, and freedom. And these are not just words, but values that form the very foundation of our nation's greatness. Well, for decades, support of Israel has been a bipartisan issue, but that is changing, and it is changing fast, as the Democratic Party is being steered by its progressive base that appears to pick Hamas over Israel. Well, earlier this afternoon, Senate Republicans heard from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a virtual meeting in which they were given an update on Israel's war against Hamas. What did the Prime Minister share with the senators? Well, joining me now to discuss this, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Homeland Security Committee and the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Tony, always great to see you.
You know, we took one of the first congressional tours over into what's called the West Bank in Samaria, Judea, probably about, 10, 12 years ago. We were on that tour. Things have changed a lot. It used to be a bipartisan issue, not so much anymore.
Yeah, it's painful. I think about when I first came into Congress, I used to tell people there weren't many bipartisan issues, but Israel was one of them. And now suddenly this has become very partisan in many ways. And I guess it really hasn't been suddenly. It's been transitioning over several years. But I'm hearing more and more rhetoric that is more pro-Palestinian than it is pro-Israel, forgetting that Israel was the one who was ruthlessly attacked in a terrorist attack. They weren't trying to provoke anything. They were just trying to exist.
What can you share with us about your conversation with the prime minister today?
Yeah, we had about a 45-minute dialogue with him. He walked through some of the military operations, what's happening in their government and the structure, how they're holding up, quite frankly, under the stress of being under a war suddenly since October the 7th of last year. He did talk about some of the conversation about Rafah and about Hamas, because there is this whole push currently from the administration to say, don't go into Rafah and take out Hamas there. There are multiple units that are organized terrorist groups that are hiding out in Rafah. And the prime minister was very clear to be able to say this would be like World War II, to say take out the Nazis, except don't go to Berlin. Leave Berlin alone. You can't actually go into that area and take out those Nazis. His challenge is, I've got Hamas as a organized terrorist organization that they have repetitively, even recently, said, when this is over, we're going to go back and do another October the 7th. We will do it as many times as we possibly can. He can't do that without actually going into where they're hiding under civilians. So they've also been very clear. They're doing everything they can to protect the lives of civilians. And when you often hear the numbers from Hamas saying that there were 30,000 people that have died in this, they conveniently leave out that about 14 or 15,000 of those are Hamas fighters. So that ends up with a one-to-one ratio. While every single life is valuable, every life is valuable, Israel is being very aggressive to be able to do what they can to be able to protect the lives of civilians. But this is a war that Hamas started, and they continue to hide hostages and their fighters among civilians.
When I was in Israel last week and met with the prime minister, and he shared, actually using the same illustration, he also said that, look, we can't fight to a draw. We have to win.
Right.
We can't just come to a truce and say, hey, let's go about our business, because as you just pointed out, he's made very clear, Hamas will be back.
Yeah, they will. They have threatened to be back, and they mean to do it. So this is not just an idle threat for them. Their intention is to be able to come back and not only kill more Israelis, civilians, but they intend to build more rockets and just shoot them at Tel Aviv and everywhere they can haphazardly.
Did he also express the concern, not only do we have Hamas, which is, quite frankly, not the greatest of the threats, you have Hezbollah and even, Iran, who it's the puppet master, but they could step up their actions against Israel to a greater level.
Yeah, he talked about the three H's that are out there, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis that are in Yemen. And people lose track of the fact that in Yemen, the Houthis right now are still launching rockets at Israel. Some of them have actually impacted in Israel all the way from Yemen, that they're launching rockets towards civilians there. Hezbollah continues to be able to shoot rockets into northern Israel, where you've got 100,000 Israelis who have had to flee from their homes in northern Israel because Hezbollah continues to be able to threaten them and to be able to launch rockets at them. So while they talk about the people displaced in Gaza, and that's all human life is valuable, and that's tragic for there what's happening in that war that Hamas started there, people just conveniently leave out 100,000 people in northern Israel that are also having to live as refugees away from their homes because of Hezbollah attacks.
So why only the demands of Israel to lay down their weapons, to pursue a truce, when they are not the aggressors in this war, as you pointed out, and he shared this with us, surgically trying to take out Hamas, being very careful to avoid civilian casualties. But they're not letting the refugees. Egypt will not let them go across the border into their country. I would think, Senator Lankford, that with the strong ties we have with Egypt, given the amount of foreign aid we give them, we could lean on them if we wanted to allow passage through that country.
Well, I would say the Egyptians have been very, very clear that they don't want Hamas in their country either. They don't want the Palestinian refugees in their country either. They have a fence on their border with Gaza, just like Israel has a fence on their border with Gaza, to be able to make sure those individuals are not flooding over the border into Egypt. So while everyone seems to attack Israel in this process and to say that they're isolating these Palestinians in Gaza, the Egyptians are in the same boat to say, we don't want that here. And even what we've seen from the leader of the Senate, for him to be able to step out and to be able to say, that is Leader Schumer, I should be clear, for him to step out and call for elections and a transition of Netanyahu, he's not called for new change in leadership in Hamas or change in leadership in Hezbollah or change in leadership in Venezuela or in Iran. It's a change in leadership in Israel. And we need to be very clear that Israel has elected the leader of Netanyahu, and he is leading in the time of war, and we need to stand with our ally during a time of war.
Absolutely, 100%. Senator, I know you got to go. I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to catch up with you.
It's good to see you again, Tony. Thanks for holding this up.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. You know, I was talking with someone about this the other day. What if Republicans came out, because the Democrats are wanting, you know, more funding for Ukraine, and said, you know what, we have questions about the leadership of Ukraine, and therefore we think the Ukrainian people should have an election and replaced Zelensky as the president. Well, I mean, they would go crazy. Oh, you're undermining the country in the middle of a war. Well, that's exactly what Chuck Schumer did to the Israelis by calling for them to dissolve their government and have elections. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but this is important. I've shared this before. In fact, I shared it with the prime minister when I met with him last week. I believe America's future is intertwined with that of Israel. You say, what do you mean? Not only are they a strategic ally for us, in fact, they provide great stability in the Middle East. They are a stabilizing force. They do a lot of work in keeping the Middle East stabilized. But beyond that, beyond being a strategic military political ally, they are spiritually very significant to us as a nation. And I speak as a Bible-believing Christian here, where the scripture says in Genesis chapter 12, those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed. Now, you say, well, you know, that's Old Testament scripture. Well, it's also history. Look at those countries that have pursued this very small percentage of the population, about 0.05% of the population, but yet they seem to be in the crosshairs of so many people, so many nations. I think every generation has to answer the question as to how they will treat the Jewish people, whether they'll be silent at their persecution or participate in the persecution. Neither one turns out well. I believe our future is intertwined with that of Israel, because as a nation, America for the last 60 years has really been walking away, has steadily walked away from the word and the ways of God. And last week, I was standing on the Mount of Blessing in Israel and Samaria, areas that the United States, the Biden administration, wants to give away in the two-state solution. And, you know, the blessing came when we walk in the ways of God according to the word of God. We're not doing that in America. We're not. But I believe that God has preserved this nation because we have stood with Israel. We have been really a protector, a provider. We've helped Israel. And God has blessed us, I believe, because of that. When we walk away from that, America's future does not look promising. And so I believe it is extremely important that we are praying for and standing with Israel. Doesn't mean we agree with everything that they do. It doesn't mean that we can't encourage them to do it better. But we need to stand with them and not turn our back and walk away from them. And I want to encourage you and join me in praying for Israel. Last week I was there praying in different parts of the country. We're going to continue that effort. If you'd like to join us in standing with Israel, text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Okay, after the break, is DEI a prescription for bad health care? We're going to talk with Congressman Greg Murphy after the break. So don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead on this Wednesday afternoon.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, a recent rash of airline safety incidents has many pointing to the FAA and the airline industry's obsession with DEI rather than safety as a major contributing factor. Well, about 36 members of Congress are trying to get ahead of the downward DEI curve as it pertains to health care by introducing legislation to stop the spread of the DEI virus in America's medical schools. Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Greg Murphy, author of the bill. Dr. Murphy serves on three House committees, including the Ways and Means Committee, which is overseeing a lot of activity right now in Congress. He's been in several hearings today, and I appreciate him stepping out to talk with us. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of North Carolina. Dr. Murphy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Hope you're doing well. Thanks to you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and your concerns about how that is infecting America's medical schools.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I think diversity can be a very strengthening thing. People learn from one another of experiences that perhaps they don't have. But the thing that we can't do in medical schools is lower our standards of merit, lower our standards of excellence. Why? You know, as I said yesterday, this is not art school. This is not English school, not history school. This is medical school. This is where people's lives are at risk. I think really the relationship that's strongest is the maternal bond, but physician-patient is right up there, and the trust and the abidement in both of those relationships. And the fact now that our medical schools are making their students sign DEI pledges, and they're pushing out activists, not advocates, is very, very troubling. And we're seeing this already in the decrease in quality of some of our students, and the fact that they're burned out 5 years after their residency rather than, you know, 25 years. And I think it's time to put a shot across the bow. This cannot happen. We cannot be taken over in a world of objective science by liberal arts progressive ideas.
I mean, it has real-life consequences, and they can be deadly. So let's talk today about today's Ways and Means Committee hearing with Secretary Javier Becerra. As Ways and Means Committee Chair Jason Smith noted in his opening statement today, and I quote, words like diversity, discrimination, racial justice, and gender all appear in the administration's budget far more than the border. Fentanyl, the number one killer of Americans ages 18 to 45, is only mentioned once in a footnote.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Equity was mentioned 77 times and fentanyl was mentioned once. This is the whole, I actually said this just a few minutes ago to Secretary Becerra, is this, it's the tone deafness of this administration, absolute tone deaf. They've opened up our border to be invaded, in North Carolina up in Gates County 2 weeks ago, an illegal immigrant was shooting people and he was found to be a terrorist on the terrorist watch list, found with guns, he was found the Quran, he was found with Arabic military information. And what are they doing? They're absolutely contributing to the downfall, the spiraling of this great nation. And, Becerra just, smiles with his arrogant smile, and it's just tone deafness, Tony. It's absolutely tone deaf to the problems that face this nation.
Dr. Murphy, I have to ask this question because I know this is what's on a lot of people's minds. I hear it all the time. Why? Well, how can they be so blind to the impact that the policies that they're pushing have upon this nation? Is it intentional, or are they that? I don't want to say. They got to see it. They cannot ignore the consequences.
I'll say incompetent. I'll say it, Tony. I'll say it. They're incompetent. And the other thing is, I'm not one. Maybe it's my surgical attitude. I demand competence. I demand excellence.
Yeah.
Patients.
Well, if you were my doctor, I would want that. That's what I want out of my doctor. That's what I want out. Actually, that's what I want out of every place I go. I want the best. I want the opportunity to have the best. I don't want to lecture on, the various aspects of society, which is what's happening in our medical schools today.
Well, we're lowering the bar of excellence. Look, I want a diverse class, but I'm not willing for us to sacrifice what the merit bar is basically have a nice, better pie puzzle.
But can't we have both?
I think those.
Can't we have both?
Yeah, we can have both. We can have both. But absolutely, I think it would be great to have both. But we can't let people. I remember. I won't give anecdotes, but. Think if you're going to have heart surgery the next day, somebody's going to be splitting your chest open. Your life is in their hands. Who do you want doing that? Who do you want doing that? Do you want somebody who may be mean, but he's the best in the world? Or do you want somebody who got in because of identity politics?
Yeah, I want the best.
Who do you want as a
patient? Want the best.
I don't understand it. Neil, we go back to the border. Tony, the only thing I can think of is they want to overrun some states. Illegals now are counted in the numbers for members of Congress, the representative numbers, to overrun states, to flood them up to get more Democratic members of Congress. Certain states want their illegal folks to vote in elections.
Yeah.
My God, what are we becoming as a country?
I want to go back very quickly, Congressman, before we run out of time. A biblical parallel to what you're talking about, professionalism, having the best. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, when he went to him to talk about the leaders, he said, able men who fear God. And that's even what I look for in elected leaders. I want Christians, but I want able Christians. I want men and women who know what they're doing. Character matters, but so does competence.
Absolutely. And, Tony, if we let folks in just merely because of the amount of melanin in their skin or what their identity politics is, it pollutes those who have the same, whatever skin color or identity politics they have who are excellent.
Right.
And we're lowering the bar. And, Ben Carson, I've had several discussions with him about
great
this.
Great guy.
He absolutely agrees.
Yeah.
Absolutely agrees.
We can have both. We can have the diversity and we can have excellence. I appreciate you pursuing that and keeping those issues at the forefront, even at great political risk, because some will take and distort it. Congressman Murphy, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless.
You know, it's so true. I mean, in everything, we should pursue able-bodied, competent individuals. And all the other stuff is important. Character, all that's greatly important. It's tremendously important. But they got to know what they're doing. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday. Well, last night was the biggest primary night since Super Tuesday, with voters heading to the polls in Arizona, Florida. Florida was the GOP only. Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio. Now, while the results of the presidential primaries were as expected, there were other key races worth noting, including the lead up to what could perhaps be the most consequential race in the battle for the Senate this November. And here to share the details on that is Matt Carpenter, director of FRC Action. Matt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, so before we get into the results of last night's poll, I mean last night's elections results, FRC Action been up on the Hill the last 2 days delivering thousands of petitions that listeners have been signing.
That's right.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, we've been busy this week delivering petitions to the Hill. Yesterday, we delivered 43,000 signatures to Speaker Mike Johnson, just encouraging the work that they're doing to secure the border, asking them to use all available leverage, everything in their power, to just give the American people some relief from this just torrent of humanity crossing our southern border. We understand the Biden administration is now flying them into this country, and we're just asking, hey, let's use every available means we can to secure the border. And today, we delivered 20,000 signatures to Representative Chris Smith, encouraging his excellent work to prevent more funding to UNRWA, which has been involved in the October 7th attack on Israel.
And, we actually, when we were in Israel, we were praying over, actually, at the Nova Musical Festival site, praying and really binding those financial dollars coming from the United States to UNRWA. Mm-hmm. And, reports are the bill's not out yet, but it does look like they're going to be defunded in this appropriations bill.
Yeah, it does seem like there's some bipartisan consensus there to at least suspend funding temporarily, but we're trying to end that funding altogether.
Well, and we did under the Trump administration, and hopefully under the next administration we'll do the same. But thanks for delivering those. So, folks, if you signed those border petitions or you signed the petition on UNRWA, that was delivered this week, and Of course, we will continue to let your voice be heard on Capitol Hill. So when we put those out there, please be sure and sign them. All right. So what can you tell us about yesterday's election results?
Yeah, well, as you point out in your opening remarks, Tony, on the presidential side, there were a lot of contests, not much to report there. They pretty much went as expected. Biden won on the Democratic side and Trump won on the Republican side. But all eyes were really on Ohio. There was an important race on the Republican side to see who was going to face off against Democrat incumbent Sherrod Brown in the Senate race there. So of the 34 Senate seats up for reelection this cycle, 21 are defended by Democrats. And you've got this razor-thin margin in the Senate where 51 Democrats against 49 Republicans. So, you know, you've got states like Ohio and West Virginia, Arizona, Montana with Democrat incumbents or Democrats who previously held it. So Ohio could be a pickup opportunity to decide who controls the Senate come 2025.
I mean, it looks pretty promising for the Republicans going into this election in terms of picking up the Senate.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a target-rich environment if you're on the Republican Senate, you know, campaign arm. You got Arizona, there's a competitive race. We just mentioned Ohio, but also Wisconsin and Michigan, too, and Pennsylvania, and maybe even Virginia. You never know.
So what do our listeners and our viewers need to be aware of? What's coming up next? What resources do we have available for them that can help those that still need to vote?
Right. So there's a lot of presidential primaries between now and the conventions. The rest of this month is going to be relatively quiet, but the next primaries I've got my eye on is Pennsylvania, April 23rd. They've got some important House and a Senate primary as well to figure out who's going to challenge Bob Casey for that seat. And then next is Indiana, where you've got the congressional primaries as well, a Senate primary, and then also governor, too. So India is one of those states that's going to choose a new governor in 2024. So those are some states for your viewers to be aware of. And I would direct them to visit frcaction.org. We've got excellent resources on how to register to vote. We've got our scorecard there, our party platform comparison documents, and also voter guides that are available.
So there's a link there to go to the iVoter guides that for each of those states that are coming up.
Correct. You just put your zip code in, and a customized voter guide will be available for you.
Wow, that's great. Very handy. So go to frcaction.org. And the other resources there, Matt, on FRC Action, in terms of the party platform. Now, this is the old party platform because the parties will not craft their new platforms until the summer when the conventions meet. But it's a good place to start in showing the contrast between the two parties.
Excellent. That's an excellent point, Tony. And, you know, all the members who are currently there, you know, data shows about 80% of the members vote with their party. So it does give you a sense of how the parties have been moving and which direction they've been going. And definitely want to encourage people to pay attention to the conventions and what the party platforms look like coming out of the conventions.
And start having those conversations with friends now because, you know, people say, I just don't know. The personalities of these people running. It's not about the personalities. Focus on the policies that they're promoting because we, as you pointed out, 75% to 80% of the time the parties follow those platforms. And what Joe Biden is doing right now, the Democratic Party, is actually in their platform.
That's right. That's right. He's not deviated far from the Democratic Party standard. And, you know, it's something that people can share. They can get a link from our website and share that with friends and family.
All right, Matt Carpenter, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for delivering those petitions to Capitol Hill today.
My pleasure, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right. And folks, again, that's why we do these petitions. We deliver them. We take them up to Capitol Hill. We give them to the members of Congress so that they will hear from you. So we're your hands and feet here in our nation's capital. We help amplify your voice. So please be a participant. Don't just be a spectator. All right? By the way, we need to be praying for Israel. I talked about that earlier. That's another action item for you. Text Israel to 67742. All right, after the break, I'm going to be joined by Regent University Associate Professor Dr. A.J. Nolte to talk about what's unfolding in Haiti. You don't want to miss that conversation. Coming back.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. By the way, we're calling on all men to awaken to the truth that God's Word has given them a directive to provide leadership in their home, in their church, in their community. And we're bringing that call to the men of the greater New York and New Jersey metro areas through a Stand Courageous Men's Conference this coming Saturday. That's right, this Saturday. This will be a day of hope, awakening, and healing for men seeking to be all that God has created them to be. Now, we're grateful that Liquid Church in Parsippany, New Jersey, will be hosting this conference, and you can join us. There's still room. It's almost full. It's exciting. Men are coming from all over. But you can still join us. Go to standcourageous.com to find out more. That's standcourageous.com to find out more, but do it quickly. Our word for today comes from Numbers chapter 20. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord." Now, this is not the first time they encountered a lack of water. They had been there before, and God had provided. So did they turn to God in faith like David when he faced Goliath, recounting how God had delivered him before? No, they complained. Now, keep in mind, this was a new generation, but it was the old, same old song and dance. Why did you bring us here to die? You know, Egypt was so much better. Well, their bodies were freed from slavery, but their minds and souls were not. Many people are physically in the church, the body of Christ, but mentally and spiritually, they're still in the world, living in captivity. The mentality of bondage is stronger than the iron of the chains. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible. Or if you'd like to join me each day for this journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's the word Bible to 67742. It's a text that'll change your life. The Caribbean country of Haiti has been plagued by chaos and bloodshed since its founding, with episodes of major violence flaring up from time to time. While the latest chaos that has been simmering over the past year erupted in recent weeks, plunging Haiti further into an increasingly serious humanitarian, political, and security crisis. What's behind this? It's important to know what's behind it in order to find out what the solutions might be. Join me now to discuss this, Dr. A.J. Nolte, an associate professor at Regent University. Much of Dr. Nolte's Ph.D. dissertation research looked into faith and politics in relation to state formation. Dr. Nolte, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you with us.
Great to be back, Tony. Thanks so much.
So before we get into what's currently happening, let's step back here because, you know, Haiti has, I mean, it just has a record of turbulence and difficulties. Give us a little bit of historical background on Haiti.
So Haiti is becomes independent of France in 1804. Very famously, there's a slave revolution. It was one of those Caribbean slave colonies where slavery was particularly brutal and pervasive institution. And so there was a revolution, and it's the chaos of revolutionary France. Haiti becomes independent in that time period. And really has kind of since then, there have been periods of stability, but there's been, as is often the case in Central and South America, there's been a lot of instability, chaos, class conflict. To a certain extent, some of the conflict has been racial in the past between different, variations. Race and class are sometimes closely linked in Haiti. And so what you've seen is, you know, sort of brief periods of stability, longer periods of instability. And in recent years, probably within the past, since the 1980s, state failure. And state failure in particular that followed on from the Duvalier dictatorships, father and son, who were dictators. I'll come back to that in a second when we start looking at how we got there. But you had a pattern of dictatorship followed by chaos and instability, and then a spiral that has led to what I think would be, and some people say this is controversial, but I think it's fair to say we are now in state failure. In Haiti.
Let's go back to Papa Doc and Baby Doc in particular, because the United States has a history in Haiti.
Yeah.
I mean, our hands are not clean when it comes to Haiti. Let's talk about that.
So the United States has a long history of intervening in Caribbean countries, sometimes to provide quote-unquote stability and security, sometimes to kind of look out for its own interests in terms of extraction. And the U.S., particularly during the Cold War, had a history of supporting dictatorships that were often quite brutal in Caribbean countries. And so many people looking at Haiti will say, well, you know, the U.S. is really in whole or in part responsible for a lot of the problems in Haiti. And I think the problems in Haiti, there's so many different causal factors that are causing the situation in Haiti. So the U.S. intervention is probably one of them. But I will say this. I think it has been somewhat, in a lot of the popular media, has been somewhat exaggerated. Let me give you a little bit of context as to why I say that. When in comparative politics, which is my subdiscipline of what we study, we like to look at countries that have a lot of things the same so we can try to isolate what's different. And Haiti, of course, Tony, as you know, shares the island of Hispaniola with the Dominican Republic. Now, what's interesting about this comparison is that in 1960, these two countries had basically the same per capita GDP. Now, Dominican Republic's GDP is about five times that of Haiti, according to the World Bank. And what's interesting is, even in that time, both of those countries had dictatorships, both those countries had U.S. interventions, both those countries were sort of U.S. allies against the Soviet Union, and the U.S. was supporting them. And yet, there's a very different outcome. And so what we try to do in a situation like that is say, okay, look at these two countries. Is there a variable that we can isolate that is different? And I will say this, just to be honest with you and your listeners, with Haiti and the Dominican Republic, that's actually a very challenging thing to do.
Is there, when you look back at the history, as you said, it became a country as a result of the slave revolt, seeking their freedom. Poverty has long been a problem there. But as you look at the, you know, in your expertise of the role of faith in nation formation, is there any faith foundation in Haiti? I mean, there's a lot of the cultic activity there.
Yeah.
Is that a contributing factor to the instability that we see in the chaos?
So I want to say probably yes. I want to give a slight caveat to that. And the caveat is it's really hard to get good numbers on things like how many people are voodoo practitioners in Haiti, because different studies and different things that you go will claim different numbers. And there's a reason for that. And that is because in Haiti, as you see in other parts of the Caribbean to some extent, Christianity and these practices that are, you know, largely drawn out of West African and indigenous Caribbean spirituality are kind of mixed in with Christianity. So it's right. all sort of mixed together in what we call syncretism.
Right.
But there are a couple of things that I look at when I look at religion. So generally speaking, religion will actually be a positive for development for societies. It increases social trust, so trust between members of the same society, and it increases social capital, because religion and religious organizations, they tend to do a lot of stuff. They combat poverty. They help bring people together. Christianity in particular tends to be really good for things like literacy. Because Christians are teaching people, obviously, to read the Bible. It's very important. However, what you can see sometimes with different types of paganism and some of those elements that were syncretized with Roman Catholicism in Haiti have this, is that actually the relationship with the gods is more like, a more equivalent of a mafia relationship, where it's patron-client. It's not like a personal relationship based on, mutual love and you know, even in fact, having certain rights as bearers of the image of God. It's very much about extracting power and having, you know, sort of being almost being in a patron client relationship, where the pagan gods operate as sort of mob bosses. Why might this be problematic? Well, partially because it sets up an institutional framework where it normalizes that as sort of to say, this is the way society is organized, because as people believe about transcendent realities, that's going to impact the way they think, you know, the world works. And so, unfortunately, I think that could be leading to some of the lack of social trust for those outside of the immediate circle that we see in Haiti. And low social trust is definitely something that is inhibiting economic growth and economic development.
Also, with the absence of that, I mean, it factors into the rule of law. I mean,
yes.
Because, you know, the one thing about especially Christianity, which is the area that I've focused on, the foundation of all forms of government, whether it's family government, whether it's church government or it's civil government, is self-government. And
yes.
And you really, that seems to have been all but lost in Haiti.
Yes. Well, and you're right in saying that the rule of law is directly related to a lot of these religious ideas. And particularly, I would say Christian ideas play a very important role there. So, for example, take the issue of corruption. We as Americans tend to think of corruption as unnatural. But actually, if we look at the Bible, corruption is a natural. It's a consequence of the fall. It comes in from sin. And it's part of human nature. And we actually have to work really, really hard to build a society where that's not just seen as the way things are done.
That's kind of the role of the church in keeping
absolutely.
Lawlessness in check. I mean, the New Testament yes. even talks about that.
Yes, and that's borne out by social scientific data. Strong churches and strong high levels of religiosity, particularly Christianity, tend to correlate with low levels of corruption. Now, if you look at just pure demographics, you look at Haiti and say it's majority Christian, but a lot of that Christianity, there are these other syncretic elements that are there. And so that might be impeding the normally we would see Christianity help with rule of law, and we're not seeing that.
But that is not, as you pointed out, not isolated to Haiti. We see a lot of that in Central and South America. So I want to go back to your comparative analysis with Dominican Republic. Can you identify any variables that are different that might contribute to the reason that Dominican Republic is prospering?
Probably the best variable is the Dominican Republic, even when it was under dictatorship, there was the dictatorship, and this is not to say that the dictatorship of Rafael Trujillo wasn't nasty and terrible, and we would obviously prefer to be under democracy, but Trujillo did try to modernize the country and try to kind of build things toward free markets. From what I can tell, and I'm not an expert on the history of Haiti as much as I am in some other areas, but from what I can tell, basically the father and son Duvalier just stole everything that wasn't nailed down.
Right.
And there was no attempt at any kind of development or anything for the country. And so what happened when they fell was anarchy. It's very similar in trajectory to Somalia, where you had a very brutal, corrupt dictatorship. It falls, and then immediately you have a humanitarian crisis.
So are we looking at the same situation in Haiti as we see in Somalia, where the strongest warlord, gang leader, comes forth and provides some kind of tyrannical government, in terms of not really government, but just kind of keeping everybody in check because they have the strongest power?
Unfortunately, that's one of the possible outcomes. The United States has intervened in the past and it hasn't been able to sustain it. And that's one of the problems, is that if you're going to have a successful solution in Haiti, you have to have locals on the ground who have enough capacity to basically, beat the gangs in a fight if they need to, right? So the military and the police have what we call in political science terms the monopoly of force, and also have enough trust from the people that they can govern the country effectively. That's a very long-term project, and that's not a project that the United States, that U.S. intervention is, if we're going to do that, is a Band-Aid at best, and the solution is going to have to come from local folks. And I would also say it's going to have to come from a serious, sustained engagement of faithful Christians. The good news from that perspective is that Christians have a history of being involved in countries like that, being the first responders, being at the tip of the spear. And actually, as in a paper that I co-wrote with Ariel Del Turco, who's there at FRC, if you want a force multiplier for international development, faith-based organizations are the key to that. And so it's going to have to be primarily local-driven, and then the outside actors that are going to have to be the most involved are faith-based. But before they can come in, of course, you need security.
Yeah, so where does that security come from?
Security, I think, is going to have to come from the U.S. and other actors helping to stand up local, stand up and train local forces. And that's a long-term project.
Yeah.
In other words, you might have temporary security provided by internationals, but you need to transition as quickly as you can to trusted local forces.
Right, because without that, you cannot begin to do the rebuilding is required, especially having the faith community come in and build those relationships and in the infrastructure that's going to be necessary. Dr. Nolte, great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Good to see you as well.
All right. Absolutely. Have a great day. Well, another thing to be praying about. If you think about it, though, this again goes back to elections. I'm not going to pin this all on the Biden administration by any means. But the world is on fire. And this is just the latest example of it. A strong America provides for a stable world. Not completely. But we've seen this administration, as I mentioned yesterday, evacuate more embassies and pull out more Americans from different countries than in any other administration in history. A strong America is good for the world. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.